following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Tom Terrific Tuesday episode of Full Press Coverage Radio Live. That's right, I made that right up off the top of my head. That's why it was such a terrible, terrible thing to say, because I really didn't put much thought into it. So let's distract you folks from all that, and I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off and bring my co-host in right away, because he's going to help balance out the idiocy that I've already brought to the show already 10 seconds in. So without further ado, I got to welcome in my co-host. He is Mr. Rhode Island. He just got back from his inspection of his soon-to-be-completed statue at Providence College. He is Mr. Mike DeBate. Mike, how are we doing today?
La, la, la. I'm doing well, buddy. And you know, you should be too. Don't sell yourself short. You're a tremendous slouch. Relax. It's all good. It's all set. You don't have anything to worry about. So, you know, that's what it is. You know, be the ball, Ian. Be the ball. So, and in all fairness, folks, it's Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday. It's I'm guessing it's still Tuesday. The calendar is kind of meaningless lately, folks. But hopefully it won't be much longer. Mm-hmm. More positive signs. We saw a little bit more progress in terms of the NFL. A little bit of a quiet day for Major League Baseball, NHL yesterday, but it's still progressing toward opening back up. And I think America is on that track right now. And hopefully professional sports are not too far behind it, because I really think we need it. We're starting to get entertained by the most ridiculous things in the world. I looked at the Twitter trending list yesterday on Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, this really is a sign that people need to get some normalcy back. There's just the random topics that are trending on Twitter now lately are just it's mind-boggling. But you know, what are you going to do? I guess it's just the way people are passing the time now. But
well, the arguments too are just getting completely. I mean, we're talking about like every off-season argument rolled into one. And of course, you know, I laugh because I just don't understand. I mean, we talk a lot about 24 on this show, and we're going to talk about it today. Don't get me wrong. Let's you know, there's exactly 0% chance that we won't talk about 24, but the links that we go to talk about 24 and the amount that we talk about it on the show pales in comparison to how often Undisputed talks about Jordan versus LeBron. I just don't get it. I mean, there's got to be people in that meeting room. You know, this is how I think this is what I think happens. After every show, the whole crew walks to the back room and someone is sitting there with that Men in Black memory erase pen. And as they walk through into the green room, boom, flash their memory. So guess what? They wake up next day, do the same exact freaking thing. Like, I just don't get it. I mean, I understand that they get ratings and all that. And it's like people are like, they'll tune in for the same exact thing over and over and over again. But I see it every week. It's like, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm living in a loop, and this would be happening regardless of a quarantine. So like, it's made it even worse now, because like, obviously we had the documentary going on. So, you know, this would be a time to bring up something like that in normal, balanced programming, but Undisputed, things like that, it's not balanced programming. It is FS LeBron is pretty much what the channel is. And it's like, I laugh and then I just get frustrated, because it's like, I mean, how often can you have the same stupid debate over and over and over again? We get it. Shannon, you're a LeBron guy. Skip, you're a Michael guy. That's what you guys were picked. That's what you guys were chosen to be when you started doing this debate show. We get it. I'm tired of it. Give me something else. Give me something else so I can skip that. I mean, I skip it normally, but, you know, it's hard to avoid on Twitter.
I was just going to say that, no, I mean, there really is nothing else when you think about it. I mean, and I'm not talking about there isn't anything else. Yeah, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. But for a show like that, for a network like that, for the medium by which they're going to give you this information, that's it. Jordan and LeBron right now is the hot topic. What are you going to do? You're going to talk, you know, Brady, Manning, Rodgers, you know, whoever, you know, whichever quarterback, Mahomes, whichever quarterback you want to plug into, he's better than Brady. That type of argument is something that is just not going to stick right now. Now, in another couple of weeks, if football starts to progress a little bit, should say a couple of weeks, a couple of months, when football starts to progress a little bit and you start to see some of these seasons maybe start on time or abbreviated schedules or whatever, then that becomes more relevant. But right now, because of the Last Dance documentary, it's fresh of mind. People are now going either, you know, Team LeBron or Team MJ or whatever. You see this all on social media. And again, I agree with you. It's absolutely nauseating. It's just, it's an unending cycle of unwinnable arguments. People that are convinced LeBron is the greatest. Yeah.
The worst part is like they're coming up with these like hypothetical scenarios now. It's like if LeBron, who would win if LeBron or Michael teamed up with the Monstars to take on the Harlem Globetrotters? Like, what? Like, what are you talking about here? Like, you know that episode of South Park where they're making fun of the Family Guy writers? And, you know, they basically just say that the writers are just basically taking three words and putting them together, and that's the joke. And, you know, it's funny because you kind of get it because, you know, Family Guy, one of its qualities is just its ability to be random. Well, I don't think it's too far off with how they come up with these scenarios where it's like they have a huge giant tank. And I'll even go with the whole walrus thing, you know, maybe picture a bunch of Nick Wright swimming around and just pushing up these topics. But basically it's like, okay, you know, they pull out each ball. It's like, okay, who would win more, Michael or LeBron, if, and then you put in qualifier one, qualifier two, qualifier three, all of which are completely hypothetical. But again, you know, this is the nature of these shows. And again, places like FS1 are literally LeBron 24/7. I mean, they're not, excuse me. Yes, Kyle, that's right. Nick Wright is the manatee. Kyle's joining us in the chat room as he does every day. Tune in tomorrow. He'll probably be with us tomorrow to talk some hockey. We're going to have some fun with that. But getting ahead of myself. Anyways, it's one topic after another that it's just all the same thing. It's LeBron versus Jordan. It's LeBron is this. LeBron. I'm so damn tired of it. Like, I just hate coming on Twitter. Like, I don't even search this stuff out. That's the thing. It's like, I'm not looking for these debates to jump in. They're just there all the time. It's like every day, every Tuesday, like clockwork, a new video of Shannon Sharp pops up on my timeline with LeBron jerseys in the background. It's like, dude, you're a grown man. That guy's younger than you. Grow up. Like, you're supposed to be a national a commentary guy. You know, you're supposed to be on, you know, giving your opinion on things, not being a fanboy. I mean, like, what's the difference between him and Nick Wright? It's not much. Nick Wright's got Patrick Mahomes stuff on his back wall. LeBron James or Shannon Sharp acts like LeBron is like his homeboy, as he calls him, which, look, there's some entertainment to it. I do think as frustrating and as stupid as I think some of the points that Shannon makes, I think he's a kind of a funny guy. He can be funny. And, you know, he brings a lot of, you know, unique sayings and all that stuff to the program. And I get that. And it's fun from that sense. I'm so tired of that stupid debate. It's so nauseating. It makes me sick to my stomach. So naturally, talked about it for 25 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, it's just it's nauseating to me, too. Again, it's the type of argument that will keep people talking, even if people like us are saying that we are sick of it. We can't take it anymore. We don't want it. It's like the music of the Pied Piper. You hear MJ versus LeBron and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't want to pay attention, but I kind of have to pay attention. I got to see what they're saying now. It really is. It's like Pavlov's dogs. You keep hitting that, you know, that feeder bar, and all of a sudden the little pellet's going to come down, and whether you want it or not, whether it's, you know, old hat or not, you're going to consume it because it's just, it's one of the only things out there right now. So hopefully we can give people a little extra something to talk about.
Of course, you teased
about maybe talking a little hockey tomorrow. I'm up for that. I'm looking forward to it. Mm. Getting our good buddy Kyle in the studio with us is always fun. So, you know, it's variety is the spice of life, folks. That's why you listen to FBC Radio Live in the morning. We try to bring a little variety and a little bit of happiness to the masses, folks.
Exactly. So let's talk more 24 like we do every day. no. Well, again, we feel like 24 is what the people want. So we're going to continue to give that to them. I said,
and by people we're talking about us. So
yes. Well, we are the people. We represent the people. Again, we are
we the people.
We the people. That's right. Anyways, I want to check in with you because last week we started talking about how you jumped into season 7 of 24, and I watched the whole thing this weekend. I mean, I just put it on in the background, and instantly I remember everything started coming back as soon as you started watching it. You remember who was in it. We commented through text or offline after the show last week about Duncan Meyer making an appearance as
yes.
as the man who tries to kidnap Kim, you know, very very inconspicuous looking character sitting in the airport watching Kim. He was either going to kidnap her or he was just a creeper staring her down. So one of the two. It was not good for Duncan Meyer, who lost that big race twice to Jerry. But so, excuse me, he's in that season. We already talked about John Voight. He's bad guy number two. You know, we know how we talk about the cycles of bad guys, like who's coming in, who, you know what I mean? Who's going to be, you know, at that 12-hour mark, who's going to be the new bad guy A. Well, that's John Voight. You know, he's the big bad, weapons contractor, correct? It's Starkwood. Am I
yes.
remembering that correctly? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Your knowledge of season 7, 24 once again comes in. John Voight was excellent in that role. I don't think he gets enough credit for it. He was phenomenal. I mean, he always is. John Voight has something innate in him that allows him to play the prototypical villain, and he does it so well. In a lot of ways, he's like Kiefer. I mean, when you think about Kiefer Sutherland before 24, he was known for his villainous roles. He wasn't known for being the good guy,
the
so
to speak.
The greatest
hero in American lore.
Absolutely. Oh, no, it's true.
I was completing what you were thinking. That's all.
Well, that's no. That's a dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcasting school's paying off for you. But no, I'm kidding. In all actuality, Voight was phenomenal in the second half. I don't want to say really second half, maybe like the last third of that season, and bringing that dimension of a villainous character. I always say great villains have a little bit of likability to them. And his character of different dimensions to some of the characters that were introduced. You saw, you know, a little bit of a deeper character in Renee Walker. I think mm-hmm. you saw Larry Moss, and you saw like the instincts that he had as the director of the FBI was something that was kind of lurking within him all along, but he really wasn't willing to bring it out. And it took Jack. It took, I think, that competition between he and Jack to kind of bring that out and really make him a little bit of a deeper character as well. I thought Jeffrey Nordlund did a great job playing that role and evolving throughout the day and starting off, well, you know, like this straight-laced, buttoned up, I'm going to follow every rule, cross every T, dot every I. And then by the end of it, he realized that's simply just not the way that you're going to be able to get things done. Sometimes you got to break the rules a little.
And that was kind of the overlying theme of the entire season. I mean, it starts out that way. Jack's, you know, up in front of the Senate committee, you know, getting reamed by Red Foreman up there. And, you know, the whole idea and the whole, struggle is how do you balance, you know, what they consider torture versus above the board police, you know, that type of stuff. And, you know, that's a struggle for all the characters throughout the entire season. We see others deal with it in different ways. But I'm glad you brought that up about Larry and other characters, even, again, John Voight. There's always something that you can kind of relate to for the most part. So John Voight, obviously, there's, you know, these bad guys, they always have, you know, the country, you know, is their reason for doing what they're doing, you know, for whatever motivation. And again, Most of that's true. I think a lot of these characters, the roots of their plans and ideas come from wanting to be a better countryman or help the country. We saw it with Charles Logan, you know, the whole idea of trying to secure oil and all this stuff. You know, the idea of it is like, okay, you're looking out for the country, but the means in which you get there and all the things that happened, you know, after the fact, obviously turn you from a likable bad guy to just overall evil person. So, but 24 did a good job of doing that because, again, without any of that background, without any of that substance, you don't get attached to these characters. They're just characters, and you don't really get that pull. So, like, you know, Larry was a little bit different. He wasn't necessarily the quote unquote upper management guy. Like, you know, there's always that guy that's always above board. You know, sometimes they push back. We saw it in what's the director from season five, the woman whose daughter was killed.
Yes. Oh my God, I'm blanking too. Wait a minute.
Aaron
Driscoll.
Aaron Driscoll. Right. 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 Yep. Okay. So Aaron Driscoll. I don't know. For some reason, I was mashing her and Karen together, so I knew that wasn't right. So, but yeah. So, like, you know, that's the traditional, like, oh, I'm the hard nose. We're gonna do everything my way, type of thing. You know, we go by the book, type. You know, it was the same way with her number one guy, her Jack. When that season first kicked off, was like, now I'm blanking on his name too, but you know, the guy who was playing the Jack role of Ronnie, right? Was it Ronnie?
Ronnie, then,
Ronnie,
yes.
Right? Yeah, Ronnie, not yes, absolutely, yeah. I'm not talking about what's his face, little from season. Oh Jesus, I'm completely blind. You know, I'm doing a terrible job with these names, but what's the child actor, the blonde kid? God.
Oh, Ricky Schroeder.
Yes,
that was
thank
yeah,
you.
That was from season 6. That was yep. Well, you know, I don't blame you for forgetting that because season 6 is kind of like that's the forgotten season.
But,
that's the one that everybody's kind of like, you know, well,
but
you know.
He became a very likable alpha 2. I guess to Jack because
yeah, I actually thought he took a decent part in that for all the stuff that season 6 gets for the ribbing. And look, mm-hmm. I've gone on record here when I say I don't believe season 6 is quite as bad as people make it out to be. It doesn't measure up to the other seasons, but I don't think it was necessarily the garbage heap that a lot of people like to believe. So yeah, Schroeder did a decent job mm-hmm. with that. I thought he was again, yeah, he came in, it was almost like, yep, this is it, this is my territory now, and there was some deference to the respect that he had for Jack Bauer. I'm already into season 8, and I actually had it on in the background last night while I was doing some things, and he, you know, the character of Cole Ortiz, played by Freddie Prinze Jr., is very similar. He right. recognizes right off the
fame.
Bat, absolutely, of Summer Catch fame. That's right. And I Know What You Did Last Summer when we talked
yes,
about Jennifer
right.
Love Hewitt last week.
And
we're
I
not going to get
know
sidetracked
you...
on that. Yep, absolutely.
I still know what
not
you did last
get...
summer.
That's right. Yep. And yep, I still know what you did last summer. I can't believe they actually milked a sequel out of that. But in any case, it... Did see you mentioned Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Yes.
My brain goes in a different
and
direction.
And Fred and Scooby Doo. Sorry.
Yes, and Fred. Yes, and Fred and Scooby Doo. Right.
We
That's
should pay
that,
attention
actually,
to the chat
yeah.
room some more because Kyle's pretty much third hosting from the chat rooms there. So we.
That's right.
Kyle.
Yep. Kyle, thanks, man. Thank you for keeping us on point because Ian and I have a tendency to go off the rails, folks. In case you haven't noticed, but in any case, that. Character as well. You look at these guys that come in that have a different pedigree. They're the new hot thing at CTU, supposedly, mm-hmm. but they still have reverence to what Jack was able to bring to the table and how he did his job. And watching those characters interact with each other and this season, as opposed to some of the other seasons where you've seen him work with some new talent, it's pretty cool. It really, really is. So it all comes back to Jack, though. They all need Jack Bauer because he's the only one that can save humanity. I told you all this COVID-19 stuff would not be necessary. Jack would have contained this virus right from the get-go. He would have kept it limited.
We've seen him do it multiple times, and I'm not
kidding.
We've
seen him do it.
We've seen him do it. And to go real back to Ricky Schroeder there, and again, everyone obviously you know, you forget about a lot of things from season 6. Like you said, I mean, it's for those of us who have watched the series, season 6 kind of is the it's the punching bag when it comes to, you know, season 8's probably right, not too far behind it, but, you know, season 6, just, you know, we've talked about it before, with all the hype, it kind of fell flat, but Ricky Schroeder being a diamond in the rough in that season, because, as Kyle mentioned in the chat room, once again, he had really, honestly, and I say this, like, the more we talk about it, the more I realize how much I loved his role in this series. It just wasn't long enough. Like, I don't think he had enough time to, because, you know, he got the explosion that pretty much blinded him, and that knocked him out. But, like, when it comes to having a character on this show that's I guess somewhat similar to Jack, he might be the closest. And I know Tony. Well, Tony's a different, he's his own different character. You know what I'm saying? Like, they work very well together.
Yeah, Tony's one of
well
the main
together.
Characters. Yeah. That's, yeah, exactly. Like, they have similar training, similar instincts, mm-hmm. but ultimately Tony is a separate character. You're right about that.
Like, I could see, and I'm not saying they would ever do this, because, again, it would, I think in terms of reality, I think too many people would be hard pressed to not think of Ricky Schroeder as that's who they think of him as, you know what I mean? But I feel like the character that he was playing in that season was very similar to and what I could have said was pretty believable. If you were to come back with a 24 legacy with him in the starting role, I could have maybe bought into that a little bit more, because we've seen what he did, and he kind of had that same sort of attitude and no nonsense type stuff, same stuff that Jack has, but and they're both pretty short, so maybe they're, you know, maybe that's a complex. So Mike, if I ever need someone to kick ass and take names, I'm bringing you with me, because that's why I'm thinking all these short jokes are just going to add up, and eventually you're just going to snap. Unfortunately, I'm
that's exactly it. Yeah. It's just fuel for the fire, my friend. Pretty soon, I'm just going to bust through the door and go, tell me where the bomb is! You know, so, I mean, it's right. It's one of those things where I'm going to need a hacksaw. I'm going to need a hacksaw. One of the all-time great lines.
Oh, of course. Of course. You know, I played, obviously, here a lot, the only reason you're still conscious is because I don't want to carry you. That might be my favorite line, because that comes all from that crazy nonsense of the first 4 episodes of season 5, where everything's just all crazy, and then you got the kid who looks like he's like in his early 20s, but he's apparently like 13 years old. You know what I mean? Like, I always found that funny. It was like, yeah, I'm only like 12. I'm like, wait, what, dude? You look like you should be like going to work right now. Like, what the?
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Exactly. Oh, you look like you're at the very least in grad school, but you know, well, maybe not. But you know, I think every TV show goes through that. I mean, you know, you look at the old episodes of Beverly Hills 90210. None of those guys look like they really should be in high school. But, you know, right? It's one of those things. It's, you know, it's just that I think that's about. Hey, maybe it's a Fox thing. Who knows? You know, maybe it's just, you know, cast drastically older actors to play younger roles. But no, in all actuality, I think what the evolution that you've seen watching season 4 and then season 5, I did admittedly skip season 6. I just didn't, you know, feel like, you know, dealing with it. And I went immediately to season 7 in terms of
binge
watching.
You don't
want to
see Peter Chiarelli play Jack's brother? I mean, I always laugh because I always think he looks exactly like Peter Chiarelli. And I put up.
Yeah, he really does. Yeah, I mean, he really does. Really, but we saw him, but we did see him in season 5. But at the time, no one knew it was Jack's brother. I remember, he did not know. We heard him say one time Graham, and everybody was referring to him as the Bluetooth guy. I remember that when that first came out, everybody was talking about him as the Bluetooth guy before we ever heard Logan utter his name.
24 is always on top of the technology. Let's be real here. You know, we think of it as pretty you know, old technology now, but at the time, you know, it was 2005 or so. You know, 2004, 2005. So it was really cutting edge stuff. But no, but you know, that's part of the reason why season 6 fell so flat, was because in season 5 you saw this mysterious group. You know, and like, obviously you learned about them, and again, some of it made sense, but it just felt like, you know, the quote-unquote jumped the shark a little bit in terms of some of the storylines that they had. It was just like, all right, I feel like you could have done a little bit better, and that obviously took away from the entire season, although it does, like I said, if you do go back and watch it, watch it with it with an open eye, because I do think it each time I do watch season 6, it kind of, it warms on me a little bit more. Just a tad. Have we lost you again, Mike?
I'm I'm still here. Can you
hear okay.
Me?
Yeah, no. Now you're back. Well, the internet's struggling today. We've dropped you like three times. It's all right, though.
So, oh, well.
I'm sure they're your three best points. It's all good.
Yes, they were my three best points. Or it could have been just three periods of foul language lapses. But yes. No, in all actuality, folks, I have returned. And yeah, I can see that about season six. Like I said, I think there's a lot of – I think there were some storylines in season six. Michael! Trent's one in that season. I thought he was –
Oh, yep. He's
Am I back?
Hello? Yeah, you're back now. You went out again. I was just sitting here. Just next time I'm going to solve a Rubik's Cube the next time you cut off.
Yeah, exactly. Just that's it. Just put the spots, the gaps in my audio. Just rent those out for space. You can sell advertising to fill in and just put in a really quick like 3 or 4 second advertising.
I'm,
but
I'm at the point now. What I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna go through all of our old episodes, mash up a bunch of your audio, and make whatever conversation I want to make out of it. So, I mean,
there you go. Yes,
already
exactly.
got some good
fill it with Mike's sound bites. I've got plenty of them too. Make sure you get the ums and ahs in there, otherwise it's not realistic.
Yeah, of course.
But in any case, with regard to season six, there were some performances in there that I think were really, really good. I thought that. Again, we talked about Rick Schroeder. I thought Powers Booth was excellent
in that season
as Vice President Daniels.
Yes.
I thought he brought such an element. And Powers was one of those, may he rest in peace.
Yes.
Powers was one of those actors where he could deliver lines and you weren't sure if he was being good sarcastic, bad sarcastic, mm-hmm. evil, sinister, on the right side of caution. It the way he delivered lines in that show I think was excellent. Going back and thinking about how good he was in that role, that was one of the saving graces of that season.
Really was.
I thought the overarching I thought a lot of what happened with Jack and Audrey coming back into the picture, and then obviously going back through and seeing Secretary of State Heller at the end. It was Secretary of Defense Heller, excuse me. At the end, I thought was a decent overarching subplot that needed to come in there. Some of it was some of it was a little over the top. But,
this might ruffle some but I hated Audrey. I hated Senator or Secretary of Defense Heller too. But I just honestly they were two of my least favorite. Like, the storylines were important, I get it, and, I enjoyed some of the, when Jack breaks in to save Audrey, but for the most part, Audrey was kind of awful, if you think about it. She couldn't make up her mind. She was very unfair to Jack in a lot of ways, and again, she, I don't know, she just, her character bugged me quite a bit, and I was just like, oh, you kind of ruined Jack, man, you I don't know. I don't know. I didn't like it. But...
No, there was always that sense of self-righteousness.
Yeah,
both of those characters.
Yeah.
Like, they were above anything it was almost like they felt like they were above Jack. And they were his moral compass, and they were gonna fix him, and they were gonna teach him how to go on the straight and narrow. Whereas I think characters and people maybe that Jack had interacted with in other aspects of his life. All right, albeit you want to compare and contrast two love interests for Jack. All right, we'll compare and contrast Audrey and Renee Walker. And I think in a lot of ways, I think Renee got Jack. She understood him.
Mm-hmm.
She, maybe because she was in the field, maybe because she knew the type of stuff that he did, but she kind of understood him in a way that I don't think that Audrey ever really did. And I think that's why those two characters were maybe star-crossed.
She played too naive, Audrey. She was like too naive.
Yeah.
It's like that you shouldn't be. You should know. You shouldn't sit here.
Yeah, I know. In that level, and even Heller, I think her father tried to tell her a couple of times, that's his job. That's what he has to do. Like, even though Heller tried to look at himself as being, I'm above him. I'm not as bad as Jack. But he understood what Jack's role was, whereas Audrey tried to, I think, maybe a little over the top be...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe just a little bit too self-righteous for her own good, and try to turn a blind eye to what Jack was doing, but not really realizing that what he did was necessary, and a lot of times what he did was right.
Well, let's put it this way. I think Audrey could have been served with far less airtime, in my opinion. Kyle does bring up a good point in the chat room, if you're joining us, that, you know, she did go to China to tell, you know, and that's admirable and all that stuff. I just, you know, it was personal, like, kind of a, I just didn't enjoy much of her time on the screen. And again, I think like some of the best moments that involved her weren't really like, you know, we talked about it right before we got on air, the whole storyline between, like, I found the storyline between Jack and Paul more interesting than Jack and Audrey in season four, you know, the dynamic between their relationship. And of course, one of my favorite episodes or arcs during any season is the, you know, setting off the EMP and then having to, you know, take on the commandos and say, okay, now I want to watch season four again. So I might have to go back and watch that. But before I forget, though, because again, I'm so glad.
Well, I did discover a plot line because again, I'm going through season eight, and season eight, obviously, you know, one of the big climaxes of season eight is where President Hassan's daughter drives a black Chevy Impala into the vestibule, I guess, if you want to say, of CTU, and it's fitted with an electromagnetic pulse bomb, which is an EMP. According to season four, they said an EMP would never kill anyone. All it does is just disable the disable the electronics and kill it. But in season eight, it does kill the driver of the car, because again, Kyla Hassan is able to get out of the car. She's shielded by one of the agents. I don't know, it might have even been Hastings himself, who was the director of CTU. Right. Someone grabs her, shields her, you know, gets her down, and is able to. But the CTU agent that goes into the car, saying that he can get it out of there, so that way it'll be out of harm's way. He does get killed in that. So if you're in the immediate radius of something like that going off, apparently it can kill you. That wasn't something that was mentioned in season four.
Unless you're
Jack, but that's different. Yeah,
I mean, Jack literally survived like exploding car. I mean, look, that's the beauty of 24. Is like you have to, you know, suspend your belief for a little bit. You have to, you know, kind of, you know, realize that there's a lot of reality mixed with a lot of, you know, action in Hollywood, and that's what the show is, and that's what is great. But before, again, I'm going back a few points here, but I do want to kind of touch real quick on what you said about Powers Booth, because my reaction was right off the bat was like, great point, I love it, because I thought he was a guy who David Palmer is the best president easily. I think Powers Booth could have been a much more memorable character in this series had he had more airtime, because he was fantastic. Like, not only did he play the sinister trying to come for your job type backhanded type politician, he did it in a way that, although you may not agree with it, there was some justification to it. But at the end of the day, he was a morally his morals were in the right spot, because eventually he came to realize what was going on. But again, he was fantastic in that series. I'm glad you brought it up. It was one of my favorite characters in the entire run of the show, and one that doesn't get as much airtime, and I thought could have really been a fantastic either villain or just, you know, just a good president for the show. And he was, and I thought, yeah, he was great.
And he was convincing. Yeah, and he was convincing in both roles, and that was really, I think, the trademark of how Powers delivered lines. You know, I mean, just as an actor, he was able to deliver a line and you really never knew what his intentions were, because he delivered it in a way that was, it had a sarcasm to it, but you never knew when there was actual realism lying underneath it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what would have made his character so indelible. One of the interesting parts of that is that season six and the transition into season seven was indeed when the writer's strike happened. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that may have had to do with him not coming back and
that's
having
true.
a more concrete role in the series. I think in a lot of ways, I think that kind of messed things up a little bit. Maybe actor schedules and things that were, you know, may have coincided at one time, maybe didn't coincide on another time, because they did write his character off in the Redemption movie, and then they had a new president come on. And again, 24 was ahead of the curve, you know, first female president. We haven't had that yet, but they're always ahead of the curve. They're always one step ahead when it comes to stuff like that. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it will be Telltale someday, but Powers Booth was probably one of the better bright spots of season six. Doesn't get an awful lot of credit, but that's why we're talking about him today. The late great Powers Booth, given a great performance and given that character, the Vice President Noah Daniels, some love, because that was a very good character and it was very well written.
One of my other favorite roles of his was Sudden Death, the Jean-Claude Van Damme classic.
Absolutely.
And his very memorable Burt Reynolds like disguise that he wore trying to get away from obviously Jean-Claude Van Damme. And even if you don't know, the premise of the movie is this, and we are a sports show, guys, despite, you know, what we've been talking about for the majority of the show. So we're gonna bring it back to this and kinda help preview what we're gonna talk about for tomorrow. And this is how we do things, because tomorrow we're gonna talk some hockey, we're going to talk some playoff hockey, hopefully some future playoff hockey and some previous playoff hockey. Well, this movie, Sudden Death, the plot is Powers Booth is the bad guy. He's at Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Penguins and, actually, I don't even remember who the opponent was. All I know is it was a great Jean-Claude Van Damme movie with a lot of awful, great moments to it. You know what I'm saying? It's like the classic 80s action movie, you know, that you know, it all generally falls.
Oh, it was great. It really was. Some of the action scenes in this, I mean, it you know, suspend reality, folks, and you know, take a little bit of a break from having to be snarky and realistic, and you'll love this film. I guarantee it. It was great.
It's great. I recommend any Jean-Claude Van Damme film if you're at it, you know. Our good mutual friend from Johnston, Rhode Island. We're both fans of Jean-Claude Van Damme, actually. We watched a lot of them when we were roomies back in the day, you know? If you can believe that. Mike, you still there?
Oh, no, I'm still here. Yep, absolutely. No, Finn was a huge fan. I do remember that. It was something that was, you know, always interesting, and he always had something to say about it. So, great stuff.
It's one of those things. Like, you're old enough to grow up in the 80s, or at least old enough to know people that have influenced you and shown you a lot of these videos about, you know, just obviously, you know, old 80s movies. You know, my grandfather was big into the Jean-Claude Van Damme genre. So, you know what? That's exactly what I got into. So I enjoyed it. I love Sudden Death. I love Kickboxer, Bloodsport, obviously. I mean, they're all the same
Blood
movie.
Sports,
I couldn't tell you the specifics of the, I mean, I could tell you the specifics of the plot, but the point is, I mean, Bloodsport, Kickboxer, really, what's the difference? I mean, like, except for...
It really is, yeah.
Like, a few slight changes to the plot. I mean, it's really essentially the same movie, but I'm all for it. It's kind of like season, you know, different seasons of 24, but anyways, the Sudden Death thing.
By the way, my sources are telling me that the team that they were playing in game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals at the Pittsburgh Civic Arena was indeed the Chicago Blackhawks.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. All right. So that's
and great. It was a fictional rematch of the 1992 Stanley Cup Finals, and by my sources, I mean Wikipedia, folks.
I was pretty impressed. I was like, wow, Mike's got people. Mike's got people calling in, checking up on it. No, see, that's
I
why
don't
we
have
need...
people.
They're made up. They're all made up. All my friends are made
up.
Yes,
actually, exactly.
Actually,
yeah.
Finn doesn't actually exist. He just happens to be a part of both of our subconscious that we've convinced ourselves that is actually real. So, in fact, he is not real. He is just made up. And
yeah, it's like Inception and Sixth Sense all rolled into one.
Exactly.
We see and hear dead people, but they don't actually exist.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a good crossover. Imagine that type of movie. M. Night Shyamalan's on the phone right now. He wants to make that movie. The cross between Inception and Sixth Sense.
Well,
see dead people, but do they really exist, or is it all a dream?
Yeah, so it's like a deep meta version of this of that movie. So, well, that's what's going to happen when FPC Studios opens up and we start producing movies. You know, we're going to be less like WWE movies, you know the production company. Your
does this mean
chaperone?
I get to do the creepy voiceover for these movies?
Yeah, of course.
In a world
facing
where
change.
Ian is producer.
Yes, and the budget is very minimal. We present,
and Mike has better than a $3 internet connection.
We got to come up with a good plot, though. It's got to be very character centric. We got to find the right characters. But no, have you ever seen the movie The Chaperone starring Triple H?
Yes, I have. Sadly, I have. Don't ask me why I've seen that movie, but I have seen that movie.
I'll do you one better. I've seen that movie like 5 times. So.
Oh my god, I sat through it once and I didn't know I didn't know how I did it. That really does require some sort of an award, my friend. We have to craft some sort of a medal or a trophy. Or you want me to get the statue outside, PC? I think you deserve the statue for watching that movie 5 times. Triple H owes you a good debt of gratitude, I assure you.
Sometimes you got to zig instead of zag. All right, and yeah. that was a line from the movie, and I know it because I've seen the movie about 5 times. No, it was kind of a. Back in I say college days, but this is like post college days. This was, I stayed out in the same area. I went to college and I just kind of lived out there. So technically I was still considered college age ish, so I guess you can refer to that as college age. But anyways, buddy of mine, we would see that movie when it first popped up on Netflix. And of course, we're big Triple H marks and love the goofiness of it, but it was one of those horribly awful great movies that I enjoy watching. Oddly enough, it has what's his face, he's in every he's in just like everything, but he always plays like the like sketchy dude. Like he was The Departed, he was what's his face's cousin. Slinging drugs. He was also.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot he was in it.
He was the bad guy, or the.
Yeah, that was like one of the Costigan cousins in the.
Well, he's also.
Oh god, I know his name, and it's gonna come to me. Oh shit.
Okay, go to your sources.
Sorry, folks.
Go to your sources, Mike.
No. I'm not gonna do the sources on this one. Kevin Corrigan. That's the guy's name. Okay. Yep, Kevin.
Yeah,
Corrigan,
I had no idea.
Yep.
I'm glad you know.
And for those of you that are fans of Modern Family, Ariel Winter actually played Triple H's daughter in that
that's
movie.
Right.
So, yeah, very young role in that. But, she was just a little kid in that. But, yes, that was,
And you know who was the teacher in that movie? Or the chaperone, the leading the group there? The woman? You remember? Mike?
Oh, yes, yeah. I do. Yes, and anybody that's a Simpsons fan, you'll definitely know this person very, very, very well. Great character actress. You've seen her in thousands of different movies and various roles. Yeardley Smith, I do remember that. So, pretty impressive. We're going to new depths here.
FPC Radio Live, we break down The Chaperone starring Triple H.
This may be the most podcast time that this movie ever got. We should send this tape to Triple H. I guarantee you, he'll be looking at it and be like, damn it, you guys need lives. Even I haven't seen this movie that much.
I know. Trust me. Maybe I shouldn't have admitted I've seen it 5 times. I mean, the good thing is that I haven't admitted yet that it could be more than 5 times. That's the problem. I just landed on 5 because I figured.
Yeah, why don't you quit while you're ahead, there, brother? Yeah. I think that's probably a good idea if you do that.
Yeah, I will. I'll quit now. Folks, though, go out, watch it, give it a chance. If you want to enjoy an awful movie, this is definitely one of them. See, there's a difference. This is an awful movie that's entertaining. Fever Pitch and things like Summer Catch are just awful movies that are just awfully unentertaining. So there's a difference. So watch The Chaperone for its awfulness. Don't watch Summer Catch or Fever Pitch in particular because of its awfulness. I will never like Jimmy Fallon because of that movie. it's such a, like, I just don't.
It's hard to argue.
It
really is hard to argue with someone that actually doesn't mind Jimmy Fallon. Dare I say it? I like the dude, but yeah, just that movie will test your patience, folks.
I hate it. I hate that movie so much. But hey, whatever. That's for another show. But folks, watch 24. Watch The Chaperone. I'm telling you, Powers Booth is the best. Watch Sudden Death. We've covered quite a bit today,
case you haven't realized, the vast majority of this show was spent talking about 24.
Of course,
watch 24, folks. Watch 24. Go back and watch some of those. Jack Bauer is the hero that not only we want but we need in these times, and you know, it'll make you feel better. It really will. Trust me, folks.
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. He's the greatest superhero. He would have taken Thor out in 10 minutes. Let's just put it that way. For all you Marvel Avengers fans out there, guess what? Jack Bauer would have ended it right then and there. No snapping of the fingers for Thor. He would have broken those fingers and then cut them off with a hacksaw, and he would have been screwed, and he would have just bled out. So that's
and
what your Marvel movie would have been.
He would have gotten Thor to admit where the bomb was, too.
Exactly. So, folks, thank you very much. We will be back. Give us a follow on Twitter, just like our friend Chris Blackley finally did today. How the hell does that happen? How do you not follow FPC Radio Live until today, Chris? What are you thinking? But folks, don't be like Chris. Go out, follow it right
hey,
now.
Better late than never.
No, yeah,
never mind, Chris. I got your back, buddy.
It's all right. My bad.
I'm like your esteemed co-host over here. I was
flabbergasted when I opened up my phone to go tweet out the show link. And I see Chris Blackie followed me. Well, it's about goddamn time. How long have we had this account? But no, folks, go out, follow it at FPC Radio Live. Give me a follow on Twitter at IGLEN31. And, of course, Mr. Mike Debate is at MDABATEFPC. Folks, download the app. Full press coverage. Google, Apple Store. Check it out. Download. It's full free. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day.